Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Halfway through today's show, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070, WKOK, and Sean. Steve also in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford Lincoln Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf. Don't forget to, if you want access to previous shows or want to replay a show over again or something you may have missed, you can subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. We're on both iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and Google Play, and you can also find 3 months of archived shows on the podcast page and podcast archive page as well at stevejonesshow.com. Like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU, and our email, you can drop us a line anytime, stevejones@wkok.com. Bob Soci, play-by-play, voice of the New England Patriots with us. Under half an hour from now, get the Patriots' perspective of the huge showdown in the Berg on Sunday between Pittsburgh and New England, which you'll be able to hear live.
Kenny Britt now, man, you're dead.
On what's that?
They got Kenny Britt now, you're dead.
Oh, man. It's just amazing how the Patriots can, even though you might have, there may be a player or two out there that have, they may have lost a step or, they just feel that they can sign them and, like, give them a second life.
Yeah, but here's the difference, though, Sean. First of all, they've never really replaced Julian Edelman.
No.
All right, let's be fair about that. Number two, when they bring in a guy, for example, like Kenny Britt, he is not expected to be the guy. He's expected to be a role. In other words, if he's in Cleveland, they're going to roll coverage, double him because they think he's the best option and so forth. But the Patriots, you've got Gronk, you've got Amendola, you've got Chris Hogan. You're expected to fulfill a role. You see what I mean? So everyone is, oh, the Patriot way, the Patriot way. Like, the Patriots do a good job of getting players that's not perfect,
right,
but then fit a role. Like, Kenny Britt's not going to come in, and he's not going to be the number one receiver. I would say in the next three games, he probably will catch 11 passes, maybe a dozen. Okay. But that'll be better production than what they were getting. He's not expected to be Antonio Brown. He's not expected to be Antonio Brown. And that's the difference. He doesn't have to be. And that's what, you know, that's what I think is important about what they do with personnel. They bring in personnel to fit roles. They have the star in Brady. They have another star in Gronkowski. Edelman may not have been a star, but he was getting, you know, he was certainly trending in a direction. I think Butler and McCourty on defense are both top line, top notch players. You know, they've lost Hightower. Their offensive line is good, not great. And what I always find interesting about this, and this came down, for example, somebody was asking me today about Penn State, Nebraska, and women's volleyball. And I made the point, like, what? It's the Final Four. Well, you're not going to face Binghamton. You know, I said, you guys always talk about what the other guy has. Remember what you have. You know, remember what the other guy has. You know, we always hear about what the other guys have. What do you think of Washington? What do you think of Gaskin? What do you think of Brownie? What do you think of Vita Vea? Guess what? Look what you have. You've got McSorley. You've got Barkley. You've got Gesicki. Hey, you've got assets. Sometimes we lock in so much on the unknown that we forget what we have. That's why people ask me about recruiting. I said, I never worry for one second about a guy Penn State didn't get. I worry about who they got. Man, once you get them, they're yours. Love them up. You know, they want to be there. You recruited them for a reason. That's why I talk to people about recruiting. I don't ever worry about for a second about a guy Penn State, quote, didn't get in recruiting. Never worry about it. Nothing you can do about it. They chose someplace else. Okay, fine. Good luck. Right? I worry about what Penn State has. Same thing in a game like this. The Patriots are there. The Steelers are really good. Guess what? The Steelers have to deal. I mean, the Patriots have to deal with Antonio Brown. They have to deal with Le'Veon Bell. They have to deal with Ben Roethlisberger. Now, what they don't have to deal with is Ryan Shazier. That's huge because that was a matchup that would have given Gronk some headaches, a linebacker that can really run. That's one where if you're a Steeler fan, you are concerned. There's nothing you can do about it. But it does make a difference, and Gronk is back this week. And Gronk is a really, really good player. Is he great, awesome, and incredible? He can have those moments, but he's not consistently great. By the way, Schick did win last night in overtime, 76-73. They got Mifflinburg tomorrow night on the road. Schick now 3-0. Lourdes Regional had a 12-point lead last night. Tonight, 7 o'clock, following Santa and the Magic Radio, Shikellamy Wrestling. Steve Williams with the call. They take on Midwest tonight. Midwest. Billy in Winfield. How are you, Billy? It's great to hear you.
I'm good, Steve. Nice to hear you. Just had a quick question. I'm a Dolphins fan and was interested in the Belichick press conference after the Dolphins-Patriots game. I watched a lot of press conferences, and it was just very odd to me how Belichick really didn't get very many questions, and there were these huge long pauses between when he talked and the next question, whereas when they interviewed Brady, it was pretty, you know, like a normal post-game press conference where you get question, 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 question. What is the deal with that? First time I'd ever seen it. I found it very odd.
Well, I think what it comes down to is that I think the media doesn't know what to ask Bill when they lose. Because if he perceives it as being a dumb question, I guess for the lack of a better phrase, he's not going to give you a great answer. Sure. He was asked, for example, I think after the game by someone, did the Patriots look past the Dolphins? And there was a long pause, and he was like, no. And I think that's one of the reasons, I think, Billy, that when you look at him, if you want to get Bill Belichick to talk, okay, if you want to get him to talk, you ask him about history, football history, great moments, how maybe it plays today as opposed to something historical, the experience with his father, his experience with Navy football. I mean, if you want him to wax poetic in paragraphs, those are some of the topics you bring up. If you bring up the standard topics that, you know, like, did you look past them? Well, he's not going to say they look past them. That would be an affront to him, affront to his players. And at the same time, it's also insulting to the Dolphins because the only reason they won is because they look past them. Maybe the Dolphins just played better. They're a professional team, too. They're capable of it. And so if he thinks a question is in the realm of, you've got to be kidding me, he treats it as, you've got to be kidding me. And that then reduces the number of questions in the room.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny because I watched some of Sarah Sanders' political press conferences from the White House, and she treats reporters with some of the same disdain, but they still come back and continue to pepper her with questions. Whereas with him, it's like the media is scared of him, and I just thought it was funny.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, let's talk about the political one versus the Belichick one. Sarah Sanders, when she does the White House press room, is on television on MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, right? So you get to watch it every day if you so desire. Who else is on television? The reporters asking the questions.
Right.
In a football press conference, for example, they aren't usually live, so it's more of a standard press conference, whereas a White House press conference, there'll be really good questions, serious questions, policy questions, and then there are questions that there are absolutely for show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I watch a lot of the Dolphins press conferences, and I think it's probably only the second or third Patriots press conference I ever watched, and mostly I watched it because I wanted to see how Belichick and Brady responded. It was obvious they were pretty dejected after the game for, you know, for realistic reasons, but it just struck me as very odd from what I'm used to seeing. And, you know, the Dolphins head coach, the Dolphins offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, they seem to have a decent, it's not a great relationship, it's not a, you know, slap on the back relationship, but a decent relationship with the reporters, and it's obvious that there's no love lost at all in New England.
And you know, Billy, that's the other part too. Is everyone brings a different personality to the table. For example, you'd handle a press conference yourself differently than maybe your neighbor would, because you have a different personality about it. Also, after a period of time too. Like, let's take Belichick's case. You know, things build up over a period of time. Maybe some things that happened to him, for example, in Cleveland, mm-hmm. didn't sit well with him and his personality. Maybe being around Bill Parcells when he was a defensive coordinator and seeing how Parcells handled the media. Maybe that rubs off. I don't know. Adam Gase, for example. You know, his first time through as a head coach, he had a pretty good run as a OC with the Denver Broncos with Peyton Manning. Got a lot of credit from Peyton Manning. Had a decent run with Jay Cutler. Brought out Jay Cutler's best year when he was at the Bears as an OC. First time as a head coach, has a different personality. And the other part too is, unfortunately for Adam Gase, he's had to deal with more press conferences of late where he hasn't won. Whereas Bill Belichick deals at a press conference in a very rare case where he didn't win.
Sure, right. All right, Steve, great talk to you. I appreciate your insights on that. As always, it's a great show.
Thank you, Billy. It's really great having you being a part of it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, great to have you with us. 800-7, that's a really good question he asked. You know, I've never been asked that question before. That was really good. But you think about it, you know, the history happens, builds up.
It's almost like when Nick Saban does a presser. I mean, for some reason, I got to thinking of him and some of the people that are there. If there's an intimidation factor, is what they could ask him.
Yeah, but you can't be intimidated. Billy brought up the White House press corps. The White House press corps is not intimidated. Now, a couple of them, and it doesn't take a genius to figure out which ones, showboat a bit. All right. Most of them don't, but a couple do showboat a bit. You know, they're on there trying to make their little point on camera and whatever. Not all of them, a couple of them. But that group's not going to be intimidated. They aren't intimidated by Sarah Huckabee Sanders. They're not intimidated by Donald Trump or Mike Pence or anybody. They're not intimidated. The veteran reporters are not intimidated. For example, we've had Ed Bouchette on the show. Do you think Ed Bouchette's intimidated of anybody? No. Okay? We've had Jerry Dulac on the show. Do you think anybody intimidates Jerry Dulac?
No.
No.
Or Ron Cook?
Not.
Cookie? Uh-uh.
No. Or Ron Cook, or, you know, or Merrill Reese, or, you know, or Bill Hillgrove. They aren't intimidated by anybody. Because you do get to that point where it's like, where you're not going to be perfect. But you have to have the ability to know who your subject is. How do you draw out the most in the subject? My favorite is always, I ask the tough questions. All right. Did you get any answers? Then your questions were junk. It's questions that get answers that are good questions. So you have to be able to ask good what and why questions. Now, every once in a while, if you're going to be in a certain situation where you have to, quote, question the subject. But you're going to get really good answers when you just ask questions as opposed to questioning the subject. I've always had, I probably have to do more interviews than most people by a wide margin because of the show. And we're going to have Bob Soci on today. But with this show, you won't hear it tonight because we have Santa on, but the network show, I asked most of the questions on that show. Quarterback club, two players, coach, a lot of questions. I did hoops club today. I had three subjects to interview today. Pre-game shows, over the years with Joe, Bill O'Brien, Tom Bradley, James Franklin, Dick Harder, Bruce Parkhill, Jerry Dunn, Ed DeCellis, and now Patrick Chambers. I have to ask a lot of questions, pregame, postgame, whatever. And if you ask questions of those subjects, first of all, they've all been great with me, all of them. Only one time did Joe ever ask me what I meant about a question. He said, what do you mean by that? And when I explained it to him, he went, oh, he says, Steve, thanks for that. And then answered the question. And it dealt with the Cincinnati game back in the 80s. It's the only time. And as soon as I explained, I didn't phrase it well. This is what I meant to ask. And he goes, oh, and he took off from there. Right? That's the only time. Doesn't mean every interview is perfect. I did a pregame show with James before the Rutgers game. And I will tell you that if I were evaluating the interview I did with James, I stunk. I did 7 minutes of interview with him. I didn't think I asked good questions. I was like, I kind of walked out of there when I was done going, man, you did not do well with this at all. And then I went back next week with Nebraska, and I thought I turned in a good standard performance. The same thing with performance, a good standard set of questions that kind of gave a good conversation. I thought I did the same thing for Maryland, and I feel like I've done that with Patrick in basketball so far. But the Rutgers one, kind of walked out. I was like, boy, oh boy, you're throwing 82 on the slow gun with your fastball today. You stunk. You get to a point in this business where you are the first person to know when you've done it right, and you're the first person to know when you've done it wrong. Okay. Now, I don't want people going back and like, I want to find the Rutgers tape. I want to find out how bad he was. But I can tell you right now, if you're listening to the Rutgers tape and you're listening to the questions of that, like, I'm not going to learn anything from this. I felt like we bounced back with Nebraska and Maryland. But I have to ask a lot of questions during the course of the week. A lot. And you can't sit there. I was never intimidated. I've never been intimidated by anybody I've interviewed. Ever. Nobody. Bobby Bowden, Bear Bryant, Joe Paterno, whatever. No, I've had respect. There's a big difference between having respect for your subject and being intimidated by them. And, the beat reporters for the Globe and the Herald and the Providence Journal and so forth, they are not going to be intimidated by Bill Belichick. But they also like, okay. And remember, too, here's the other part. Late Monday night game. Some of those guys, some of the men and women in there, had deadlines. That's the other part we've got to remember. They had deadlines. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And very pleased to bring in the outstanding play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soci. Bob, how have you been?
Hey, I'm doing well, Steve, and good to hear from you, and great to be on your show today. Looking forward to Sunday for sure.
So yeah, Sunday should be terrific. Now, of all the things, they're coming off a loss to the Dolphins. And I always, me personally, I always love what happened, what went wrong. Sometimes the other guy plays really well. How well did the Dolphins play Monday night?
Yeah, the Dolphins played well. I don't want to take anything away from Miami and certainly this Dolphins team. I think it's a team that has more talent than the record reflects, and certainly they were at their best. They probably played their most complete games back-to-back versus Denver and the Patriots, and Jay Cutler was sensational. Having said that, it seems like the Dolphins are always at their best when they're hosting the Patriots. Tom Brady, 7-9, lifetime in South Florida against the Dolphins. The Patriots have lost 4 of the last 5 there. And I think it was really a confluence of factors on Monday night. Certainly, uncharacteristically, the Patriots didn't have an advantage in field position. They didn't have Rob Gronkowski, and the Dolphins really had a great game plan defensively, devoting an extra defender to the middle of the field and forcing the Patriots to try to beat them on the outside, and at the same time getting a lot of pressure on Brady with that outstanding defensive line. And Tom was under duress from the outset. The Pats were playing from behind after the Dolphins struck first and then got an interception to lead the field goal. And so the game was really dictated by Miami from the start. And beyond that, I think, you know, the Patriots were shorthanded defensively. I think the defense hung in there for a while. But when you go for 11 on third down, as you know, Steve, it's hard to stay in a game as good as the Patriots are. And it was quite remarkable that they only lost by 7 and still had a chance, at least a puncher's chance, with an onside kick attempt.
Right. In fact, it's the first time since 1991 the Patriots have been 0-4 on third down in a game. That's how long it's been. Amazing. Kenny Britt getting added to the mix. When you're with certain teams, like he was at Tennessee, Cleveland, he might be a guy that would get added attention because he might be the best receiver Tennessee or Cleveland had out there. So they might roll a safety or whatever in his direction. When you get to the Patriots with the balance they have, how much can life open up for a Kenny Britt because Tom Brady has other options besides Kenny Britt?
Well, I think it certainly is a factor, and I think it's especially relevant in the wake of Monday's game. Without Gronkowski, who dictates coverage, whoever the Patriots play, you've got to devote more times than not an extra defender, or sometimes two that we see, to Gronkowski. Sometimes it's a linebacker or a rush end who doesn't rush the quarterback because he's going to chip on Gronk coming off the line. But other times, you know, you might see a combination of a cornerback, safety, linebacker, any two of the three involved in coverage against Gronk, and therefore that's going to open some things up for other guys, obviously. On Monday night, what we saw is Miami use that robber defender, an extra guy in coverage, playing press man on the corners, and forcing the Patriots, as I said, to beat them downfield and outside the numbers. And the Pats have a couple of deep threats in that regard. But Brandon Cooks is a smaller guy, you know, doesn't win a lot of 50-50 balls, has a tough time on those comeback routes, it seems, and, you know, those long in cuts. Same thing for Chris Hogan in terms of what he brings. And at this point, because I think he's a little rusty coming off a month and a half on the injury shelf. So now you got a guy like Kenny Britt, who's 6'3", with good speed still, has had some productive seasons. If he can grasp enough of the playbook to be a contributor these next few weeks, I think he can help the Patriots when they see more coverages like they got from Miami. And even in the Super Bowl last year, Brady and the offense had a tough time across the middle against the Falcons early in that game, and until they started to throw outside of the numbers in the second half with Malcolm Mitchell having a big role in that regard. And Mitchell right now, he has been on injured reserve from the start this year, and it doesn't look like he's going to be able to come back based on this move. That's pure speculation, but based on the move to acquire Britt.
Based on the injuries and other factors, in reality, what kind of job defensively Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia done with that defense, because there are a lot of, quote, unrecognizable names over there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you look at the lineup that was fielded during the night on Monday, because you didn't have Dante Hightower, and he's been out for a while, and he's been the leader of that defense the last few years and a big-time player in the most important games like last year's Super Bowl. You look at the lineup, though, without Hightower, the guy that took over for him as the signal caller, Kyle Van Noy, he was missing and didn't play a lot the previous week against the Buffalo Bills. Trey Flowers has become their best pass rusher also not out there on Monday. Now, the secondary is very talented, but they had a lot of issues early in the season in terms of communication or lack thereof, and a lot of breakdowns that led to big plays for the opposition. Front seven's been a concern from the start, Stephen, as I noted, with Van Noy not out there in the absence of Hightower already, and with Flowers not out there, you know, it was a situation where you had a lot of guys that were probably regarded more as core special teamers like Trevor Riley and Marquise Flowers, right, although he's gotten more reps defensively, you know, trying to go out there and hold the Dolphins. And as I said, they did a pretty admirable job early on and hung in there for a while, but Miami was able to pull away. And I think when you look at the start of the season, the Patriots have come a long way as a defense. They've become very good in the red zone. Certainly, you know, the scoring defense is the most noticeable area of improvement from the start of the year. They're still going up a lot of yards. It's still that bend but don't break type of defense, but it has improved dramatically. And I think it's a testament to Belichick and Patricia, and not only their coaching acumen, but as well their patience and player development to get positive contributions, not only from Flowers, again, primarily a special teamer, and I thought of as a, you know, regular defender for Cincinnati, but a guy like Eric Lee. Lee was acquired off the Bills practice squad. He gets a sack in his first game. The next game, he picks off a pass at the goal line and gets involved in a couple of other sacks against his former team, the Buffalo Bills.
How impressed are you by the Patriots' acquisition of talent where maybe they see something other people don't?
Steve, I think it's one of the most important things about the success of this organization. And, you know, maybe other teams see certain skills in players, but they don't necessarily want the whole package. You know, but what the Patriots have done a great job of is finding a niche for each individual, it seems, or at least most of the guys that they acquire prior to the season and during the season, and then evolving their roles as they gain more knowledge of the defense or offense and get more comfortable. It's one of the things last year during the week that led up to the Super Bowl that I think Tom Dimitroff talked about, having been in New England previously, the Patriots' ability to plug people in, guys that they acquire just before the season starts or during the season. And in the two Super Bowl championship runs that I've had a pleasure and privilege of being around, we've seen guys like Jonathan Casillas, like Van Noy, kind of come off the scrap heap from other teams. Akeem Ayers did it in 2014. These guys that, you know, in some cases were high-round picks, second-round picks like Ayers or Van Noy, who just fell out of favor wherever they were. Maybe it was a change of coach somewhere else and a change of scheme, therefore, and they weren't quite the fit, the overall package. They come to New England, and it seems like Matt Patricia and Belichick defensively, because you see it more on defense, frankly, than on offense, but those guys kind of find a role for a guy. They hide his weaknesses. They don't put him in a position to fail. They put him in a spot where he can succeed, and, you know, they get the most out of that player, kind of, you know, the biggest bang for your buck, so to speak.
All right, you're the one that, along with Scott Zolak, you get to watch every rep in a game that Tom Brady takes. So now that you've had an extended period of time and a big sample size in person to watch Tom Brady, and also Scott being a former quarterback himself, what is it that you see in him that allows him to keep excelling at the level he excels at?
I think it's the fact that he's always searching to raise that level a little bit higher, even with all he's accomplished in his career. The bar for him is never reached. The goals are never fully attained, and he's not satisfied. You look at what he's done over the last few years. He's hit 40 now, and in his late 30s became a more agile quarterback. His maneuverability in the pocket has always been good, but his lateral movement has improved over the last couple of years. I think the deep ball accuracy, regardless of a couple of throws against the Dolphins the other night, his deep ball accuracy the last two seasons, maybe it's because he's got guys who can get downfield and get open, but that certainly has been a marked improvement to me. And yeah, his work habits, Steve, everybody talks about it around the locker room, around the facility, that, you know, he demands a lot of others, but no more than he demands of himself. And you hear a lot about his diet, and you read a lot about his diet and his workout regimen, and he really is almost a fanatic when it comes to those other aspects that lend to his success and longevity. And then there's the other factor that I think, you know, you look at around the league, and there are some talented quarterbacks with big arms and guys that are very mobile, but the pre-snap recognition, do they have that? The ability to make an adjustment at the line of scrimmage based on what he sees. And a great example of that was in the Oakland game in Mexico City. Patriots come out of a timeout. Brady surveys the Raider defense. They're down near the goal line. He redirects the two receivers on the left, including Gronkowski, but then he makes a hand signal to Danny Amendola. And essentially, he and Amendola are improvising at the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And it's the result of hours and hours and you know, countless reps working together in the practice field to be on that same page. They run the play. Amendola catches a touchdown in the back of the end zone. I mean, that's one of those plays that stands out to me. And like I say, there's just the work habits that never wane. There's never a slip in terms of his approach to the game and his focus. And you know, he's a team guy first too, and that can't be overstated. He's a guy who's a team player. He's a star, but I think everybody in that locker room responds to his leadership because I think everybody respects him as a person as much as they do a player.
You know, Bill O'Brien told me a couple different times about pre-snap and what it meant to Brady. You know, and trying to translate that to college is difficult, obviously, but he always talked about that. And the other part, too, and I see this with Saquon Barkley at Penn State, when your best player is your hardest worker, it sets a tone, doesn't it?
No question about it. And it's funny, when you started the question about Brady in the first place, and you were talking about watching him every day, I was thinking, you must have an idea of what it's like because you've got a special talent there for the Nittany Lions at running back. I think probably the most exciting player I've seen in college football in some time. And you're right. It's the work that they put in. And I've heard that from guys who've been around this team for a long time, like Matthew Slater, that, you know, if Tom Brady's doing it, everybody else knows they better do it. Right. You know, and you mentioned Bill O'Brien. I think one of the things that I recall hearing about Brady, and it was either O'Brien or maybe Josh McDaniels who relayed this, that when Tom goes to the sidelines after he sees something on the field and processes something on the field, and he's asked about it, what he'll say is exactly what the video substantiates when the coaches go back and watch the film. What he says he saw, and that's rare. You know, if he says the safety was doing this and the linebacker was doing that, and here's where our receiver was, and he should have been there, and when they go back and watch the video afterwards, you know, Tom had it right. It's got this remarkable, almost a photographic memory and a remarkable chip inside of his brain that processes the information so quickly and so well.
Bob, one final question. I'll let you go. Thanks a lot for the time today. Appreciate it. What are your thoughts on the game? What are your thoughts on the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, they're explosive offensively. There's no doubt about that. And you know, the way they've been attacking of late, and Roethlisberger throwing it so well. You know, I look at the numbers, and I think although he played only 14 games last year, and now he's going into his 14th, but the completions are basically where he was at the end of the regular season last year. The yardage, he's going to have a healthy Le'Veon Bell for this game, plus a healthy Antonio Brown. But beyond that, James has impressed me, Jesse James, and how he's developed over the course of the last couple of years, a guy you know well. A player like Juju Smith-Schuster, and I got to practice that name over and over again, because I keep wanting to say JoJo Schuster-Smith.
But I had to do that for the Rose Bowl with him.
Oh, my gosh. and, you know, defensively, certainly a lot of improvement early. Naturally, the injury to Ryan Shazier is significant. Yeah. And if Hayden can play, that could change things defensively. But I think for the Steelers, it comes down to, can they do things differently against Brady based on everything we've talked about? Because when he's seen the Steelers in the past seven meetings, he's had a great idea of where he's going to go with the ball. And even after snap, his process the ball so well, 22 touchdowns, no interceptions over the course of the last seven games. He did just say at the podium that he's seen mixed coverages from the Steelers, varied coverages this year. But, you know, he's going to prepare for everything for them, as he always does. And like I say, I think that, you know, with the Steelers' offense and with Gronk back for the Patriots, he's been a huge factor in this series. It should be a high-scoring game, which means, as you know, it's probably going to be like a grinder. but it should be a lot of fun. I think it's the most widely anticipated game in the regular season the Pats have played since I've been here. This is now my fifth season. There have been games where we've looked back and realized that there were turning points, like Denver in 2015. But going into the game, there wasn't the buildup and the implications like there are in this one. You know, so late in the season with so much on the line with these teams trying to play for that top spot in the AFC.
Bob, to you and yours, happy holidays. And because courtesy of SiriusXM, to be honest with you, you sound better than ever. So congrats on a great run so far.
Hey, Steve, I really appreciate that. You know, your listeners know the quality of your work. I have a lot of respect. And, you know, since I was watching, the Penn State story back in Annapolis and listening to your play-by-play calls on Sirius as well. Tremendous mutual respect. So I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Good trip out to Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Steve. Take care and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. The outstanding Bob Soci. I mean outstanding. You just, there's certain guys that just have it. Bob's one of those guys that have it. And Bob and I go back to his days at Navy before he took the Patriots job. I just personally like and respect Bob Soci a lot. Patriot fans are very young. Everyone knows what Gil Santos meant to me. Bob replaced him, and it was seamless. We will come back with more in a moment. We'll wrap things up. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Penn's Tavern is where you want to celebrate this holiday season. Whatever feel you're looking for, Penn's Tavern along the Susquehanna River can accommodate your needs. Mountain stone walls and wood floors can be found in the original dining area, giving you that old world charm. Continue back to the newly renovated River Room with 12 PA microbrews on tap. Grab a burger and sit back and relax in this cozy pub area. Penn's Tavern has the best gift certificate offer for the holidays. Buy 5 gift certificates of the same denomination and receive a 6th one free. Penn's Tavern, a piece of heaven on Route 147, 5 miles south of Sunbury.
And another fun show today. Great to have you with us. Don't forget, next hour, news block, followed by the Magic Radio and Santa, our 85th year of doing that. And then at 7 o'clock, it'll be Shikellamy Wrestling against Midwest with Steve Williams on the call beginning at 7 tonight. That's all here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And the Patriots will play the Steelers on Sunday. You notice CBS would not relinquish that one. That would be a great Sunday night game to have. Ooh, the whole country gets to watch it. CBS is like, no, we can't keep relinquishing games to flex. And the networks do have the right to say, nah, that's not this time. And CBS, and if I'm CBS, I'm not sitting there for the go to the league.
I thought there was a couple of 425 games that weren't flexible. Maybe I'm wrong.
That's
about that.
One of them.
Yeah.
I tell you right now, that's one of them. All right, so you're going to get, besides Bob and obviously and Scott Zolak, and you got, obviously, Bill Hillgrove, Tun Chilkin, and Craig Woofley on 100.9 The Valley. You'll have Jim Nance and Tony Romo and Tracy Wolfson. What is the game tonight? Well, we got Penn State, Nebraska volleyball tonight, so I'm going to watch that.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. I'm locked in on that. That is a must.
The goal is to be home by first toss.
But what's the NFL game tonight?
That'd be Broncos Colts.
Volleyball's a good option.
Yes.
All right, so, yeah.
I'll be watching volleyball, and then I'll be polishing off my my College Bowl preparations for the picks tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll be up all night preparing. Just list who's in what, whatever. I'll go from there.
Suit says he's done. He's got all of his picks chosen. He's ready to go.
By the way, the 2017 best sports cities came out from Wallet Hub. Fourth best state college among small, 42nd overall in the country state college.
Not too
shabby. How about that?
Pretty good.
Yeah, love it.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.